autoimmune diseases. We have these cancers, these birth defects that are happening, and that's not right for a governor to say that.
10 seconds, Tom Goldman.
Well, we have earth defenders, water protectors, you know, like Bertha in Honduras. We submitted a report to the Honduras delegation called the Dam Report. But these are earth protectors, as you know, water protectors on the DAPL. So we are here to defend them as well.
We have to leave it at that. Tom Goldtooth of Indigenous Environmental Network and Isabella Zizi of Idle No More. That does it for our week of broadcasting from here. A special thanks to our crew here in Bonn.
Sean Russell, and I'm working with AP, and I do the lighting and cameras.
Hi, I'm Jenny. I've been doing sound.
Hi, I'm Kiri from AP in London.
Hi there, I'm Julian Jones.
David Pentlow from near Oxford.
I am Sheila Nikukesai.
Zoran Yankovic.
My name's Callum Skidworth.
I'll be speaking in Berlin on Saturday night at 7:30 p.m. at the Festsaal Kreuzberg. Check our website. Democracy Now! Produced by Mike Burke, Renee Feltz, Dina Guzder, Nermeen Sheikh, Carla Wills, Laura Gattestein, Sam Alkoff, John Hamilton, Ravi Karan, Hani Masood, Tarina Nadura. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
You're listening to KBOO Portland. The time is 5 o'clock. Coming up next is your KBOO Evening News.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Thanks for Giving, a Give Guide Happy Hour with Human Solutions, ERCO, and KBOO on Monday, November 20th at 5 p.m. at the Lagunitas Community Room in Portland. Human Solutions is partnering with KBOO and ERCO to say thank you to their donors and to celebrate being included in this year's Willamette Week Give Guide. The evening includes beer and snacks as a way of saying thanks for giving to all their supporters. Again, that's Thanks for Giving, a Give Guide Happy Hour with Human Solutions, ERCO, and KBOO on Monday, November 20th at 5 p.m. at the Lagunitas Community Room, 237 Northeast Broadway Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. The Community Advisory Board will meet Tuesday, November 21st at 6 p.m. at the Native American Youth and Family Center, 5135 Northeast Columbia Boulevard in Portland. Information about the Community Advisory Board can be found at kboo.fm/cab.
This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Portland Saturday Market. Open daily December 16th through December 24th for the Festival of the Last Minute. Saturday Market offers handmade art, crafts, and other gifts created by artists from the Pacific Northwest and is located at 2 Southwest Ankeny in Waterfront Park. Information at portlandsaturdaymarket.com. And now it's time for your Friday evening news.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, a Roseburg Republican lawmaker has been accused of sexual harassment.
Parents in the Dallas School District have sued the Oregon Department of Education and Governor Kate Brown over transgender student policies.
The Senate Finance Committee has approved a tax plan that would cost 13 million Americans their health insurance.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Friday, November 17th, 2017, the 302nd day of the Trumpocalypse. I'm Linda Olson-Osterland.
And I'm Liam Delta. Parents of three current and former Dallas School District students have filed suit in federal court in Portland to block the school district's transgender student policy. The policy allows 16-year-old transgender student Elliot Yoder to use the boys' facilities in school. An attorney for the parents said the policy violates the civil rights of students who do not identify as transgender by allowing Yoder into private spaces. He claimed that boys using the locker room and men's room may be embarrassed to have to disrobe in front of another student who was biologically female. Yoder had been using a gender-neutral bathroom, but asked to use the boys' facility because the bathroom was two floors away from the locker room. In a joint press conference, the ACLU of Oregon and Basic Rights Oregon criticized the lawsuit. Representatives for the ACLU said they would probably intervene in the Oregon case, as they had in a similar case in Illinois. The lawsuit names the Oregon Department of Education and Oregon Governor Kate Brown because guidelines issued by the state define requirements to accommodate transgender students. The lawsuit in Illinois did not survive a legal challenge.
Yesterday, representatives of both the Oregon Republican and Democratic parties called on State Senator Jeff Cruz to resign. The Roseburg Republican has come under fire for multiple reports that he sexually harassed women at the Oregon Capitol. On Wednesday, Oregon State Senator Sarah Gelsler filed a complaint which provided a detailed account of years of sexual harassment by Cruz. Gelsler said that Cruz touched her breast and then her thigh, kissed her cheek, and came so close to her while whispering in her ear that he left her ear wet. She said that as many as 15 other women working in the Capitol may have been the victims of unwanted touching. Oregon Treasurer Tobias Reed, a Democrat, said the allegations, quote, warrant an investigation, end quote. He went on to say that Cruz has been advised to change his behavior but had failed to do so. Representative Newt Bueller said that Cruz's alleged behavior, quote, has no place in civil society or the workplace, and that Cruz has lost all credibility and should resign, end quote. Bueller is seeking the Republican nomination for the governor. Cruz has been a lawmaker since 1996. He has acknowledged that he touched women in the Capitol, but denies crossing any boundaries. Democratic chairwoman and former Oregon Secretary of State Jean Atkins said, quote, enough is enough. There must be consequences, not just never-ending investigations and warnings for a sitting Oregon senator with this record, end quote.
Local and state officials here in Oregon have spoken out strongly against the tax plan passed by the U.S. House yesterday and headed to the Senate. Portland Mayor Ted Wheeler says the federal tax plan is needlessly cruel. Senator Jeff Merkley called it the greatest bank heist in American history. According to Wheeler, the plan promotes income inequality and could prevent the development of as many as 600 new affordable housing units in the Portland metro area. KBOO's Ray Bodwell has this commentary.
Using an argument that even many corporate CEOs don't believe, the U.S. House of Representatives passed the Tax Cut and Jobs Act yesterday on what was essentially a party-line vote. Although the president campaigned on the promise of a rewrite of the tax laws that would benefit middle-class Americans while promoting business growth, the only clear winners in the plan appear to be large corporations and the ultra-wealthy. Under the House plan, taxes on corporate profits are reduced from 35% to 20%. For the rich, the level upon which the inheritance tax is applied doubles next year before the tax completely disappears in 2023. The bill also eliminates the alternative minimum tax, which was implemented in 1969 to cut down on the excessive tax dodges frequently employed by the ultra-wealthy. Middle-class Americans would see their taxes remain unchanged or lowered slightly until 2023, at which point key tax credits begin to lapse and taxes on middle and upper-middle-class taxpayers begin a steady rise. The Tax Policy Center estimates that over half of the bill's tax breaks will go to the top 1% by 2027. Taxes do get simpler for the average American because tax deductions for state and local income and property taxes are capped at $10,000 and the medical deduction is eliminated entirely. Although it differs in key areas, the Senate bill is equally generous to the wealthy and appears to punish the middle class even worse. Here's Oregon Senator Ron Wyden speaking yesterday to the Senate Finance Committee.
This bill seems to get worse by the hour. It started off as a tax hike on nearly 14 million Americans to pay for multi-trillion dollar handouts to multinational corporations and new loopholes for tax scammers and cheats. Then the news broke that these corporate handouts are going to force billions of dollars in cuts to Medicare.
In the Senate plan, medical expenses are still deductible, but all deductions for state and local income and property taxes are eliminated. And in a particularly mean-spirited move, the Senate plan would remove the Affordable Care Act's individual mandate, the Obamacare rule that required everyone to either have health insurance or pay a tax penalty.
Now let's cut to early yesterday afternoon. It was decided that permanent corporate tax cuts should be paid for in part by kicking 13 million Americans off their health care and raising premiums for millions more.
By using the repeal of the ACA mandate to pay for their tax cuts for corporations and the wealthy, Senate Republicans will be ensuring that at least 13 million Americans that currently have health insurance will no longer be able to afford it. At this point, it's unclear if the House and Senate will be able to reconcile their differing tax plans and if a final version will pass and be signed into law. But win or lose, working and middle-class Americans are unlikely to forget that once again Republicans were willing to throw them under the bus in order to reward their wealthy donors. For KBOO, this is Ray Bodwell.
In this edition of Civil Liberties Minute, ACLU attorney Bill Newman looks at how states could come together to work around the undemocratic limitations of the Electoral College.
When it comes to electing the President of the United States, why can't America be a democracy? I'm Bill Newman, and this is the Civil Liberties Minute. The reason is the anachronistic, non-democratic institution called the Electoral College, a winner-take-all system that awards all of a state's electoral votes to the candidate who wins the popular vote, no matter how close the vote in that state. Under this system, a candidate who loses the nationwide popular vote, say by 3 million, can become president. There is a simple fix. It's called the National Popular Vote Interstate Compact, that is, a national popular vote agreement among the states. Under this law, states would agree to award all of their electoral votes to the winner of the national popular vote. The agreement would go into effect only when states representing a total of 270 electoral votes, the number needed to win, adopt this interstate compact. So, 270 electoral votes to the candidate who wins the national popular vote, voila, democracy, without any need to amend the Constitution or even abolish the Electoral College. So far, 10 states and the District of Columbia, with 165 of the needed 270 electoral votes, have passed this law. We need states with an additional 105 electoral votes to adopt this law. The Civil Liberties Minute is made possible by the ACLU, because freedom can't protect itself.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned for Counterspin at 5:30, followed by Native America Calling at 6. At 7, Hard Knock Radio, news, views, and hip-hop. Tomorrow's weather, cloudy with a high of about 50. East of the Cascades, similar conditions. On this date in 1988, Benazir Bhutto was elected prime minister in the first democratic elections in Pakistan in 11 years. She was the first woman leader of an Islamic country and served as prime minister until 1996. After that, she went into a self-imposed exile, but returned to Pakistan in 2007. She was assassinated and died with 28 of her supporters in December of that year. The quotes of the day are from Benazir Bhutto. She said, "Democracy needs support, and the best support comes from other democracies." She also said, "When the United States aligns with dictators and totalitarian regimes, it compromises the basic democratic principles of its foundation, namely life, liberty, and justice for all."
By a vote By a vote of 3-2, the Federal Communication Commission has rolled back three long-standing rules meant to ensure a diversity of voices on the air and in print. The changes will make it easier for media outlets to be bought and sold. The rules were implemented in the 1970s to prevent newspapers, radio stations, and television broadcasters from being owned by a handful of companies. One of the rules has prevented a single company from owning a newspaper, radio, and TV station in the same market. A second rule prevented two TV stations in the same market from merging if it resulted in fewer than 8 independent stations. The third rule placed limits on the number of radio stations and TV stations that a company can own in a single market. FCC Chairman Ajit Pai said, quote, "It's utter nonsense," end quote, that his agency's decisions on media ownership would lead to a company dominating local media markets. But Democratic FCC Commissioner Jessica Rosenworcel spoke out forcefully against the changes. In a statement, she said, quote, "As a result of this decision, wherever you live, the FCC is giving the green light for a single company to own the newspaper and multiple television and radio stations in your community." Analysts said that Sinclair, the conservative broadcasting company, is a major beneficiary of the move. Sinclair is currently in negotiations to buy Tribune Media for $3.9 billion.
Despite repeated calls from national Republican leaders that he step aside, Alabama Republican senatorial candidate Roy Moore has indicated that he has no intention of doing that, and his state's Republican Party is backing him all the way. Over the last week, 9 women have come forward to accuse Moore of sexual harassment and sexual assault. Included are charges that he had intimate sexual contact with a 14-year-old and that he dated high school girls when he was a prosecutor in his 30s. Republican Senator Majority Leader Mitch McConnell has put pressure on the Alabama GOP, saying that Moore has little chance of winning, and even if he does, he'll face a Senate Ethics Committee investigation. Republican Party Chairwoman Terry Latham pointed out that Moore had repeatedly... excuse me. Republican Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, or excuse me, Republican Party Chairwoman Terry Latham pointed out that Moore had repeatedly denied the charges against him. She went on to say that the party trusted the state's voters to make the right choice. Moore is a former Chief Justice of the Alabama State Supreme Court who was twice elected and twice removed from office. He's a strong supporter of President Trump, but the White House has refused to weigh in on his fitness to run. Responding to questions yesterday, Press Secretary Sarah Huckabee Sanders said, quote, "That is a decision the people of Alabama need to make, not the president," unquote. The latest poll shows Moore trailing Democratic candidate Doug Jones by 12 points in one of the reddest states in the country.
Yesterday, Democratic Senator Al Franken of Minnesota joined the growing list of public figures to come under fire for questionable sexual conduct. According to radio anchor Leanne Tweeden of KABC Los Angeles, Franken kissed and groped her without her consent during a USO tour in 2006. Franken was a popular comedian at the time. Leaders from both parties, as well as Franken himself, called for an ethics investigation. Democratic Senator Tammy Duckworth of Illinois said, quote, "Women come across from across America should be able to feel safe in their workplace, and they deserve our support when coming forward with allegations of misconduct," end quote. President Trump, himself no stranger to charges of sexual misconduct, tweeted, quote, "The Al Frankenstein picture is really bad, speaks 1,000 words. Where do his hands go in pictures 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6 while she sleeps," end quote. Trump has been accused of sexual misconduct by more than a dozen women and admitted on tape to groping women. It's also worth noting that if the president was trying to link Franken's name with Mary Shelley's Frankenstein, he spelled it incorrectly.
Momoko Muramatsu and Maria Garcia are two pianists who want their audiences to have wordless conversations about the world around them. They met years ago and connected instantly. KABU's Zelos Zelos Marchant sat down with the duo to find out more.
XX Digitus Duo is a four-handed piano duet composed of pianists Maria Garcia and Momoko Muramatsu. They met while enjoying individually successful international performance careers. They performed at the festivals Aspen, Tanglewood, Bergen and Castells, and with groups like the Mark Morris Dance Troupe, and many, many more. Momoko and Maria's friendship go way back to their college years at the New England Conservatory, and since 2014, they've joined forces. They've been described as dynamite, intrepid, impressive, and dynamic because of the way they explore classical standards while expanding the repertoire of their shared Latin American musical heritage.
Like, I'm thinking now, Maria, Doug's piece, there's the guns. It's, I don't know.
Yeah, but it was, like, I mean, the whole.
No, 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 but now it's
can
different.
Can I say something
than last
before
year.
You say no, no, no? Thank you.
I first met Momoko and Maria last year on assignment writing for a different organization. I could tell instantly that they had a special vision and bond as they bantered back and forth and took good-humored jabs at each other while finishing each other's sentences.
The first time we met, and we were talking about the really awesome composers that you were finding that most people didn't know about, and you were thinking about what was in the news and what was culturally relevant, and now here we are where things came, you know, have come full circle.
Yeah.
And we've been talking about, like, being a little more hyper-conscious about the language that we're speaking, the pieces we're selecting.
Well,
we're playing the same. The last time we... The last
not
time
all
we,
of the same
we're, thing. The film we're playing.
Yeah, the film is the same. But I was going to tell you that since last year, you know, we discussed and said, because there's a scene with, you know, guns and...
Yeah.
And Maria, you know, initially because of her child, she didn't want to have that, you know, and then she thought maybe, can you just, you know, eliminate that part? But then we were like, what's the, you know, purpose of doing that? You know, this is the original film, and if you're going to take a part of it, then might as well not, you know, show the whole thing. So we decided, yeah, this is, you know. But then now I was just thinking, like, it's pretty...
Well, I think the thing with it, we're doing the same piece. I mean, we're doing the same film. We are working with the composer, with Dag Gabrielsen, for a future. And next year, we want to do a self-funded production where we did the last time when we met was for a self-funded production that was that we did with the REC project grant. But this year, I mean, we didn't get our, you know, it's been a difficult year, but we didn't get. A grant in time, but we've earned enough money from the CD sales that we were able to do that we can now have a production. And so in that production, we will do another film by Doug that he's working on.
They blend a mix of classical standards and Latin works with foreign films. The recent pairing is Dag Gabrielsen Richter's Ghosts Before Breakfast, which portrays the darkness of fascism over XX Digitus Duo's program of modern transcriptions and pieces by Satie, Arturo Marquez, and more.
It is the same film that we premiered last time there. It's just going to receive its Lincoln City premiere, and we'll keep playing it, you know, that we keep adding to our repertoire.
We feel like it's a really great piece, and that we've only played it once, so that we want to, you know, showcase it more.
So I think the dialogue, I mean, I remember the last time we played it was November 3rd, and there was... I think the election had not happened because it was
not
the 8th.
Yet, yeah.
So, you know, the point was still the same. The point of the film is still the same. I think the dialogue in the country has changed. But the point of that particular piece, The Ghosts Before Breakfast, is still the same. You know, it was censored in 1927 by Germans. As anti-fascist. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it still has the same relevance. Mm-hmm. And, you know, sometimes the beauty of music and film and things like that is that you don't have to necessarily, I feel, you don't have to spell it out for everybody. It's open enough with film that you can make, or with music, that you can make your own conclusions. We can just present it and the time will... It'll open up a conversation, right? That's it. I think the intent of art.
Yeah.
is to open up a conversation, whether it is, you know, you present the film and then the film or the piece of art becomes relevant in different ways. Is it more tangible? Is it more less tangible? And everybody feels differently. You know, some people feel it is not tangible to this day because they are feeling that, you know, we don't, you know, they don't see what we see, or, you know, everybody has a different opinion. So everybody can take, I mean, the best thing we can do is just to put it out there and to put it as a piece of history, whether it is repeating itself or not, that's a matter of us.
XX to Judas Duo's next performance is November 18th in Lincoln City at the Lincoln City Cultural Center at 7:30 p.m. Tickets are about $22 and are available at www.lincolncity-culturalcenter.org/events. For more information on XX to Judas Duo, you can visit their website at www.xxdigitusduo.com. This is Zelo Zelos Marchant for KBOO News.
And now we hear the latest in worker-related news from our friends at laborradio.org.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News, a Diversified Media Enterprises production. I'm Doug Cunningham. The next round of NAFTA renegotiations kick off Friday in Mexico City. The AFL-CIO's Celeste Drake says how workers are treated is a key issue in reshaping NAFTA.
NAFTA is not a trade agreement so much as an investment agreement, an agreement to make it easier to outsource jobs. This essential element, this threat, and this reality to outsource jobs to Mexico was premised on the fact that when they got to Mexico, these firms could deny worker rights and freedoms. They would be allowed to pay inhuman wages and maintain unsafe working conditions. And this is what cuts off American and Canadian workers at their knees.
Drake says corporations and CEOs benefit the most from NAFTA because they wrote it. That's why the AFL-CIO wants workers to have a real voice in reshaping NAFTA.
Global corporations and their CEOs have generally benefited from NAFTA, and that's because they wrote it. They stuffed into it an assortment of rules designed to meet their needs and serve their interests. And most of these benefits come at the cost of ordinary working families.
Lori Wallach of Global Trade Watch.
The most pivotal question is whether Mexico and Canada will engage on the series of proposals to really reshape NAFTA that were submitted by the United States during the fourth round of talks here in D.C. in October, or how it might handle Canada's proposals with respect to dealing with the abysmal labor standards and wages in Mexico and labor standards in general.
Wisconsin U.S. Senator Tammy Baldwin says she is supporting legislation that would ensure 25,000 workers and retirees in Wisconsin keep their earned pensions in full. Baldwin says without congressional action, workers and retirees could be at risk, not only in Wisconsin, but around the country. Baldwin says the Butch Lewis Act authorizes the Treasury Department to make loans leveraged by safe investments to pension plans to ensure that retirees and their families are guaranteed their promised full benefits. Pension plans like the Teamsters Central States Pension Plan, the United Mine Workers Pension Plan, and over 200 more plans nationwide are at risk. This law, Baldwin says, would put these pension plans back on solid ground for decades to come. Retired Teamsters joined Baldwin as she unveiled that legislation Thursday. WIN is America's multimedia news voice for workers.
We are sick of an economy and a democracy that are rigged against us.
Support WIN's worker news mission at workersindependentnews.com. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit workersindependentnews.com.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call us with your breaking news stories at 503-231-8032. Our production team for tonight's newscast is Ray Bodwell and Zelos Marchant. The producer is Ray Bodwell. Engineering is Jenna Yokoyama. The KBOO Evening News and Public Affairs Director is Zelos Zelos Marchand. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter at KBOO News. You're listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath, 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River, 91.5 FM. I'm Liam Delta.
And I'm Linda Olsen-Osterlin. Good night, Liam.
Good night, Linda and Jenna.
And good night, Jenna. We both say that.
Good night, everybody.
Welcome to Counterspin, your weekly look behind the headlines. I'm Janine Jackson. This week on Counterspin, the opinion column in Scientific American, headlined "The Caveman and the Bomb," conveys, just a little more colorfully, the sense one got from the Senate hearing on the process involved in the use of a nuclear weapon. Put simply, folks are scared that Donald Trump may not understand the difference between threats to rain, fire, and fury on the people of North Korea and the devastating